Peter Kovacs, 5 years ago today, received word that his days after 29 years at the Picayune were numbered. The announcement came on May 23rd, 2012, that the Picayune was going to 3 days a week and that there would be a significant reduction in staff. And Peter Kovacs, it turned out well for you, but this is a day I'm sure that you'll always remember.
I do remember it. I do remember it very well. And learning that you're going to be laid off by reading it in the New York Times was kind of a surreal experience. But in some ways, I felt like it must be an affirmation of importance because guys like Billy Martin find out they're getting laid off by reading it in the newspaper.
Did this come out of nowhere?
The publisher had retired, who I'd worked for had retired, and they had brought in a new publisher, and the family really no longer believed, the family that owned the newspaper really no longer believed in seven-day home-delivered print. So it seemed possible that they would get out of that business. The surprise was really that they chose to do it. They own about 25 newspapers, and the surprise was that they chose to do it in New Orleans, which was really their best market. Usually you would go through your failing markets before you would do something like that radical in your best market.
Now, New Orleans is a great newspaper town, and the Advocate is certainly making a push there in a big way. And it was 4 years ago this month that John Georges purchased the Advocate, May 1, 2013, and you've been there since day one.
I was there on day one. After the Picayune announced that they weren't going to be a daily, well, after the New York Times announced that the Picayune wasn't going to be a daily newspaper, and the Picayune quickly admitted that they were correct, there was a lot of civic movement in New Orleans to maintain a daily newspaper. It's, I think, one of the things that benefits a community and brings people together in contentious times, and ultimately that was resolved first by the Manships, actually, who launched a New Orleans version of the Advocate. It was not succeeding because it wasn't local enough, and then John Georges bought the newspaper and brought in a bigger staff and was committed to making it really a separate New Orleans newspaper.
So Baton Rouge, which is a smaller city than New Orleans, has a seven-day-a-week newspaper, and New Orleans has a three-day-a-week newspaper. But you have made inroads there, and it's now a regional concept that you are furthering with the Advocate. How is that going?
You know, it's going very well. This is, newspapering is a tough business. You know, advertising tends to move to digital. And when I say that, I mean it moves to Facebook and Google mostly, not to the media companies of Louisiana. And but we're, I think, unique in the newspaper business in that we are financially, you know, as robust or more robust than we were 4 years ago.
And we heard Bill Moyers talking about the challenges. There are newspapers across the country that are shutting their doors and others making significant cutbacks. What needs to be done to make sure that the industry stays solvent?
You know, the challenges mostly relate to advertising. And, you know, as with many things, I think we're moving closer to a model where people are going to have to pay for the news coverage they get. And that's not as foreign a concept as people think because, you know, when I was young in the 60s, if you would have told my parents that people were going to pay for television, they would have said you were crazy. They'd say television's supposed to be free. And ultimately, I think people have that view of information, especially in the internet era. But in the same way that pay television really bought better quality television, you know, pay news is going to bring better quality news.
877-217-5757 for Peter Kovacs, the editor of The Advocate, which is now the newspaper of record in Louisiana. Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Good morning, Phil. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning, gentlemen. Yeah, and I must say that I subscribe to The Advocate, and I think it's being run pretty well. But my questions are, do you have numbers about who's watching local news on TV as opposed to people reading the local news in newspapers?
All right. What about, is that a homogeneous group?
You know, generally it is. I don't have numbers because we're not in the TV business, so I don't look at TV audience numbers. But usually the kind of people who watch the news are the kind of people who read the newspaper. And what's similar about both groups, I think, is that both groups feel like that they have a civic responsibility to make time to appreciate the news, as opposed to, if there's any news I need to know, I'll just get it on my cell phone. Mm-hmm. And people who get news on their cell phone and don't sit down to appreciate it, I think, get a more slender version of the news.
It's generally an older audience. I saw some numbers the other day where Fox News, for example, average age is close to 70.
Yeah, Fox News trends old, and I think there was a I think MSNBC beat them among young people in the last report.
Bill O'Reilly firing.
Yeah, I don't know whether that's permanent or not. But when I was young, people, watched the 10 o'clock mm-hmm. news, they read the newspaper, they regarded keeping up with the news as something that needed to be part of their day. And now news is, we're in an ironic place because people are simultaneously better informed than ever because they can get the news on their cell phone while they're standing in line waiting to buy a ticket to mm-hmm. the theater, and yet they, in many ways, people know less.
Why do you think that's the case?
I think that's the case because when people sat down to appreciate the news, they spent a certain amount of time on it. There was much more common knowledge of what the news was. The people when I was young tended to know, for example, who was the head of Israel and who ran the PLO, mm-hmm. not necessarily because they cared all that much, but because when they watched Walter Cronkite, he decided that was important, and so they saw it.
And now there are different ways to get news, but people, in your view and in others, they're not as informed as they were when it was a monolithic process with Walter Cronkite and David Brinkley and a few others mm-hmm. basically deciding what we viewed.
And there are costs and benefits to what we've seen in my lifetime is sort of a democratization of news. Anybody can be a publisher because the embedded costs to start up launching a website are very low. And in a sense, that's good because it democratizes the flow of news. But in a sense, it's bad because in our great civic debates, people don't start out with the same set of facts. And when I was young, during the Vietnam War, there was a robust and at times disruptive debate about what we were doing over there. But you didn't have combatants in that debate working with different set of facts.
877-217-5757 is your number. 297-5633 in Baton Rouge. The email is talk@talklouisiana.org. And we're visiting with Advocate Editor Peter Kovacs. He was named National Press Foundation's Editor of the Year, and of course, this was a tribute to you and your staff, but also it was a reflection on the news that we had in this area.
That was what the citation talked about, the coverage of the summer's events of 2016, and we're very proud of our coverage, and one of the things that we're proud of is that people in Baton Rouge appreciated the coverage, thanked us for the coverage. Mm-hmm. And the other thing I don't think people appreciate enough is that there was a lot of protest, a lot of violence, a lot of destruction of property in other communities, but that mostly did not occur in Baton Rouge in the wake of the shooting, of the Sterling shooting and in the wake of the shooting of the police officers. And that's a credit to Baton Rouge.
How is this 3-day-a-week concept going here and elsewhere? Is it something that you think is working, or do you have a biased opinion on this?
I may have a biased opinion, but I also know a lot of facts about it. It's a concept that I don't think works. I think a community deserves a daily newspaper. I think having a daily newspaper with a standard set of facts helps a community in its civic debates. And as I said earlier, I think one problem with our civic debates as a country is that we don't even agree on what the facts are that we're debating. As a business model, it has not worked. In fact, just yesterday, the Advance Publications newspaper in Oregon, which went to 3 days a week, announced a set of layoffs. The Picayune has had, I think, three sets of layoffs since they did this. The sad truth is that if you don't bring people a newspaper every day, they're going to, by the time you bring one, they're going to not need it anymore.
Well, I think the Picayune, which used to have a robust presence at the Capitol, is now down to one person at the state Capitol. And I think there have been cuts with the Advocate as well, but not to that extent.
We have, during this session, we have different numbers of people at the Capitol, more during the session for obvious reasons, mm-hmm. and we have five people at the, you know, at this session, and that's more journalists than are covering the legislature and the Capitol for all the rest of the media in Louisiana combined.
And that says something. That's not so good. But you do have five, but mm-hmm. that means there are fewer than 10 people covering the Capitol right now.
There's way less coverage of the Capitol, and that's an unfortunate thing, because Louisiana structurally is a state with a very strong, powerful central government as compared to other states where power is more diffuse.
A question from a listener about the series that was done in the last year about Angola and Wardenborough Cain. What was the catalyst for this particular series of stories?
The catalyst was for his entire tenure up there. You know, Warden Cain has been involved in a number of questionable deals. Our first story, we actually published one story, and he announced he was retiring after that one story, and then we published some subsequent stories. A lot of these stories are based on, you know, tips from honest, hardworking civil servants. And one problem in the prison system, and we've said this on our editorial page, is that even with Burl Cain gone, obviously employees do not have confidence in the management of the prison system so that when they see wrongdoing, they can report it through the chain of command. And when people become tipsters to the media, it's because they don't believe in their bosses.
It's something that's pertinent, since we talked to Bill Moyers about Rikers, but Angola, which is one of the largest maximum security facilities in the world, has been controversial for years. And Burl Cain is a person who got a lot of credit and some blame through the years, but it appears, based on your reporting, that there were some questions that remain unresolved.
You know, Burl Cain was involved in a lot of, you know, side business deals, which compromised his running of the prison. And the story that led to his departure actually was about a business relationship in developing a subdivision with two people, one of whom had, I think, a stepson and another of whom had an inmate who he knew and was friendly with. And both of those inmates got favors that were not available to the general population. And, you know, that's a job that pays pretty well. It pays six figures. And as a taxpayer, I guess you have to wonder why a guy making six figures who gets, you know, his own house on campus, yeah. You know, is constantly having to go into business for himself.
Well, he resigned, but to my knowledge, there have been no indictments related to your series. But sometimes that happens. Is that something that you would welcome?
No, there have been, I mean, he hasn't been indicted. There have been charges in, there were some cases where they were ripping off various funds at the prison, employee funds and inmate funds, and his son and his son's wife are no longer, his son ran a different prison in Avoyelles, I think, but I'm not sure. And
Nathan,
he and his wife were removed from those jobs. There are questions about spending and building a house for himself. And so it's, you know, it's still playing out.
It's still playing out, mm-hmm. and it started with your reporting. And you're doing this, as you know, with fewer horses in the stable than you used to have. How difficult is it to do a story like this that takes so much manpower?
You know, those stories are time-consuming, and there are fewer horses in the stable. There aren't, you know, it has not impacted us in quite the way it's impacted, you know, other media outlets. And also, you know, from when I was young, there are way less journalists and reporters on the ground. But another thing I think people don't appreciate is that the journalism is way more efficient than it was when I was young. You know, when I was young, we didn't have the internet. We didn't have spreadsheets. I was telling someone the other day, I covered courts in Birmingham, Alabama, and every day as part of that, you had to look through a big stack of lawsuits in order to see whether any of them were interesting. Well, now you can get all that at your desk online, and you can search for, you know, you don't have to look through every suit. You can search for keywords, you know, such as the name of the mayor and the governor, in order to see which lawsuits were filed or interesting. So journalism is more efficient than it was.
877-217-5757. Still time to get in with Peter Kovacs, graduate of Brown University, by the way, 29 years at the Picayune and now 4 years at the Advocate. And he is, for all intents, he is a Louisiana native, certainly an adopted state for him. Michael on Bluebonnet sends an email to talk@talklouisiana.org asking about the box scores that are no longer in the Advocate. Have you gotten any pushback on that?
We have gotten a little bit of pushback on that, and not a lot. We were among the holdouts in publishing box scores. Box scores, unfortunately,
for baseball,
For baseball, are going the way of stock listings. And when I was young, I was at the Picayune, and we published 5 pages of stock listings.
I remember.
And eventually,
as did the New York Times.
New York Times. The Wall Street Journal doesn't publish listings of every stock anymore. And what happened was people just got that information online, and they weren't really relying on the newspaper for it. Simultaneously, baseball games, and I love baseball. You know, I watch baseball every evening in my home. I go to LSU baseball games, but baseball games take longer and longer, and we were getting less and less box scores in the paper because in order to hit the deadline, you know, you can't wait on the guy to pitch the ninth inning in Pittsburgh.
But it is a tradition that some people find assuring that they can read the box score in the paper, and now that has changed with many newspapers across the country. But I would imagine you, like anybody else, when somebody has a beef, you want to hear about it.
Oh, no, I do. And, in fact, I respond to every email and return every call from someone who is a subscriber. And I check whether they're a subscriber before I respond. And I've had dialogues with people who are subscribers. I've had people who reach out to me about their delivery problems, which I try to resolve. I don't know how to do delivery, but I try to resolve them. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad to hear from subscribers. And I tell people all the time that I'm not afraid about people being passionate and upset with us. I think what's worse is people not caring.
Well, people care about things in Baton Rouge and in the state, and a lot of it has to do with the fact that we're the home of the state capitol and we're the home of LSU. LSU sports, that's a big part of your package, isn't it?
Yes, and we have the best team covering LSU sports, we have four guys who work on LSU sports, and LSU sports is, you know, probably our best digital topic in Baton Rouge. You know, we cover the Saints, and the Picayune covers the Saints, and both of us do a good job. But when it comes to LSU, you know, we're the dominant outlet in the state for LSU sports.
Well, in our segment to come, we'll talk about what you alluded to earlier, that Baton Rouge has remained relatively calm in light of the events of last year, and it was a challenging year to say the least. But the newspaper, of course, plays a role in the mood of the public, and the Advocate has covered the Alton Sterling case with vigor since the death of Mr. Sterling on July 5th of last year, and here we are almost 11 months later, and there still is an unresolved case now before the Attorney General of Louisiana, and the public will react to that one way or the other, depending on what Jeff Landry decides to do, and the Advocate, of course, is still covering this story, and it's an uncertain future we have in our city right now.
We were actually prepared for more reaction than there was to that Justice Department announcement. I think that the expectation that this is not a matter that will produce criminal charges against police officers has already been baked into the civic debate of the community, in part because Alton Sterling was armed. And so it may be that the next announcement from the Attorney General will also produce kind of a muted reaction.
There's still a number who get their papers, myself included, thrown at their doorstep every day. And how are those numbers looking?
You know, those numbers are strong. We've maintained our circulation partly by going into New Orleans, which, you know, gave us sort of an expanded footprint in which to sell. You know, most newspapers are suffering through shrinking circulation. So our circulation remains strong. John George's recently purchased a weekly newspaper in St. Tammany Parish. And one of the things that happens when you do that is you have some circulation overlap, but you also are introduced, you have new customers who you can sell, who obviously want a print product. So that's working out well.
Okay. Well, the overall subscription number, Sunday's your biggest day, right?
Yes.
So do you hit 100,000 on a Sunday?
No, it's in the 90, 92, something like that.
And for a city this size, that's a legitimate number.
That's a good number. You know, Louisiana, selling newspaper. Louisiana is a good state for newspapers, and people, I don't think people fully appreciate why. And the reason why is that most people in Louisiana are from Louisiana, and so they care about Louisiana. Mm-hmm. They're not just passing through. But there's 1,000 little reasons that I think people don't appreciate. The obituaries in the newspaper are people, you know, your teachers and people your daddy knew and stuff like that. You know, the weddings are families you knew. The high school sports are schools you went to. You know, the college sports are schools you went to. And people don't realize this, but if you were in this business in a state like Florida or California, well, most of those people came from somewhere else. And so all those features in the newspaper don't connect with them.
As much.
Yeah.
And you came here 34 years ago to Louisiana. What was the reason for you moving south?
Well, I was in Alabama, so I moved south.
originally from Alabama.
I joined the Picayune. One day, out of the blue, a guy who was the Metro editor of the Picayune called me up in Alabama and gotten my name from someone else. And, you know, being living in Alabama, living in Birmingham, you know, coming to New Orleans was kind of a big thrill if you lived in Birmingham. And what I remember is we would come to New Orleans, I want to say, you know, 4 or 5 times a year, and this is my first memory, was when you would come to New Orleans, all your friends would ask you to go to the Schwegmans and buy liquor for them, because Alabama had state stores, and so it was expensive, and they didn't have a lot of variety, and it wasn't efficient. I don't know if that's still true anymore, but everybody from Birmingham who came to New Orleans would come back with a big trunk full of liquor and distribute it to all their friends.
But you grew up on the East Coast.
Yes.
And you've been here a long time, so it must have resonated relatively well.
Oh yeah, I mean, and as you know, as a news, I mean, my kids were raised in Metairie, and I love to fish, and the fishing, you know, and the fishing is great, and it's, you know, Louisiana is a great place to raise kids, and even New Orleans, mm-hmm. which most people think of as an adult place, is actually a terrific place to raise kids.
It's something that we talked about a few moments ago, but here's a note from Steve in St. Francisville saying, Steve Winham, it's really good to see the Advocate return to a focus on investigative reporting. Hopefully our elected officials will be inspired to exact greater accountability from their appointees as a result.
Okay. Well, all right. We appreciate the kind words.
And another listener notes that you have been aggressive in the reporting about the Council on Aging. So how do you decide that this is a story that's worthy of extensive reporting?
Well, usually you don't set out to you don't sit down and say, let's see what's going on with the Council on Aging. You know, it usually starts with something that comes up in a meeting or a tip or something, and one of the you know, one of the things I thought they were wrong-headed about at the Picayune was their view that, you know, what's the point of going to all these government meetings? They're boring. But, you know, but government meetings are, you know, the grand central station of a community's dialogue. And so usually you start with stories like this, you know, with a tip from someone or by something that comes up at a meeting or by an aggrieved person. And usually when there's an aggrieved person that has a grievance, chances are that grievance has been repeated involving other people because things don't usually just happen once.
Another listener notes the amount of coverage devoted in New Orleans and here to the monuments. Mm-hmm. That issue is one of those things that has taken a life of its own. And I saw that it was front page news in both the New York Times and Los Angeles mm-hmm. Times on Saturday. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's funny because when I started here, people were concerned, and I understood that the Advocate was being bought by a guy from New Orleans and all the people who were going to come up and be involved in it were from New Orleans, although most of the staff of the Advocate is people who were here before I got here. And people, I would meet with people and I would go on shows like this and people would say, well, we don't want a New Orleans paper. We don't care about New Orleans. But when it comes to the monuments is the number one topic for letters to the editor from Baton Rouge. We get more monuments letters in Baton Rouge than we get Alton Sterling letters in Baton Rouge. And the issue has really resonated with people. It's surprising to me the way it's resonated in Baton Rouge, but it has.
And I don't think that conversation has ended with the removal of those four monuments. I think it's just begun.
It'll be interesting to see. One of the things that this reminds me of is the controversy in New Orleans in 92 about the Carnival Cruise with Dorothy Mae Taylor and making them sign a non-discrimination mm-hmm. pledge. And one of the things that I remember about that is that by the time it ended with the end of Mardi Gras, I think in 92, and by the time Mardi Gras and that controversy ended, the community was so exhausted that it really never came up again. And it'll be interesting to see with this monuments question whether the thing still has a life or whether people are so exhausted of the fighting and at this point the monuments are down that it sort of fades away.
Well, it has been noted here and elsewhere that LSU is named after a Confederate War group, the mm-hmm. Louisiana Tigers. Mm-hmm. The tallest building on campus is a Confederate general. Mm-hmm. The building that runs by the Union is a Confederate admiral. Mm-hmm. And the graduate school is named after Confederate officers. So the mm-hmm. question, I guess, is where do we stop or do we? Is this the end?
I suspect that this is the end, but it's an interesting, you know, sort of civic debate where you stop. And in fact, that's one of the critics of what they're doing in New Orleans is raises the question of you know, where do you stop, you know, sanitizing your history. I'm not sure that Baton Rouge has the appetite to have the debate that New Orleans is having. I'm not sure New Orleans at this point has the appetite to have the debate New Orleans is having.
I'm not sure either. And it would be interesting, it will be, if this bill in the legislature passes from Representative Carmody that would require a vote of the people.
Yeah.
So the discussion continues.
I'm guessing that won't pass. But
if it does, the governor may veto it.
That's why I think it probably won't pass.
Okay. John, he says he likes the Facebook page of The Advocate, saying it is superior to the website. Facebook is a big part of the package now, isn't it?
Well, that's, you know, it's interesting. I appreciate the compliment. I don't know what he means exactly by superior to the website, but we use Facebook quite a bit in order to get the way we're using Facebook is to get people to come to the website, because if people come to the website, then we make money on the ads that surround the content. We don't make any money on Facebook. And one of the things that's really happened with, you know, in the digital space is that all of the money, the advertising money, gets sponged up by Facebook and Google. And so it's just very difficult to be a newspaper in Louisiana, you know, competing with Facebook and Google.
Well, if you've been there 4 years now, 4 years and 22 days, mm-hmm. 4 years from now, are you confident that The Advocate will remain a viable seven-day-a-week printed proposition?
Yes, I am. And I think 4 years from now, we will be the only printed newspaper in Baton Rouge and in New Orleans. And there's,
you don't think the Picayune will be around in 4 years?
I don't think they'll be in print in 4 years. I don't know what they'll be in 4 years. I don't think the family that owns it has said that they don't believe that there's a print future. They've said that they believe the future is digital. And I think we'll be more robust digitally. We're actually growing digitally, which they're not. And we're smaller than them digitally, but I think we'll continue to grow. And, you know, it's hard to say what the business model will be for this business, but it's going to probably rely more on customers paying and less on advertising, which ironically, as I said, generationally is what happened to television, is that television is much more supported by the people who watch it than when I was young, when it was entirely supported by advertising.
Well, Peter Kovacs, it's always a pleasure to talk with you.